Matthew 24, verses 1 to 25. As Jesus was leaving the temple grounds, his disciples pointed out to him the various temple buildings. But he responded, "Do you see all these buildings? I tell you the truth, they will be completely demolished. Not one stone will be left on top of another." Later, Jesus sat on the Mount of Olives. His disciples came to him privately and said, "Tell us, when will all this happen? What sign will signal your return and the end of the world?" Jesus told them, "Don't let anyone mislead you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah. They will deceive many, and you will hear of wars and threats of wars. But don't panic. Yes, these things must take place, but the end won't follow immediately. Nation will go to war against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in many parts of the world. But all this is only the first of the birth pains, with more to come. Then you will be arrested, persecuted, and killed. You will be hated all over the world because you are my followers. And many will turn away from me and betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and will deceive many people. Sin will be rampant everywhere, and the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved, and the good news about the kingdom will be preached throughout the whole world, so that all nations will hear it, and then the end will come. The day is coming when you will see what Daniel the prophet spoke about, the sacrilegious object that causes desecration standing in the holy place. Reader, pay attention. Then those in Judea must flee to the hills. A person out on the deck of a roof must not go down into the house to pack. A person out in the field must not return even to get a coat. How terrible it will be for pregnant women and for nursing mothers in those days. And pray that your flight will not be in winter or on the Sabbath. For there will be greater anguish than at any time since the world began. And it will never be so great again. In fact, unless that time of calamity is shortened, not a single person will survive. But it will be shortened for the sake of God's chosen ones. Then, if anyone tells you, 'Look, here is the Messiah,' or 'There he is,' don't believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will rise up and perform great signs and wonders so as to deceive. If possible, even God's chosen ones. See, I have warned you about this ahead of time." This is the word of the Lord.
Now, if you do have your Bible with you, or there's a church Bible near you, please do turn back to Matthew 24 and verses 1 through to 25 as we look at this passage this morning. Now, I wonder if you are a fan of optical illusions. You get all kinds of optical illusions, don't you? Like this two-headed zebra. And some optical illusions you find in puzzle books. Others you might find on the internet. And some you might find in real life. And some optical illusions are quite simple, aren't they? One that I quite like is one that I see most days when I'm taking Alistair to school. Because when I'm on Hedrick Road, I can see the spires, and I know that's not a great picture, and there's a van in the way. It was just there when I took the photo. But you can see both spires of the parish church and the barony church. And from that place in Hedrick Road, they look as though they're exactly the same size. And it makes it really difficult to work out, well, which of the churches is bigger or which of the churches is nearer? You just can't tell. And so even though I know the parish church is further away from that place on Hedrick Road, it looks as though they're just side by side, that they're right next to each other. It's an optical illusion. Now, in today's passage in Matthew chapter 24, there are lots of things that are unknown. Lots of things that are difficult to understand. Sometimes people say in church, don't they, it's like, oh, we don't want to look at the Old Testament because the Old Testament is difficult, it's hard, there's lots of things we don't understand in it. Just give us the Gospels. Just give us the teaching of Jesus. Well, hopefully you've realized these last couple of weeks, this is not easy stuff, where Jesus is speaking about the end times in particular. And like the optical illusion that I find in Hedrick Road, one of the main things that is difficult to discern in this particular teaching of Jesus is whether Jesus is speaking to the disciples about things that are close at hand or things that are far away. It's difficult to discern. Now, from our perspective here in 2024, we know that some of the things that Jesus speaks of here in Matthew 24 have already happened and have already passed. But we might discern that there are some things that might be still to come. And there are probably a few areas where we're a little bit unsure as to whether Jesus is referring to something that's already happened or something that's to come in the future. And that's the difficulty with a passage like Matthew 24. Now, let's remember, first of all, what the context of this passage is. Last week we saw Jesus speaking to the disciples and the crowds about the religious leaders. And we saw Jesus denouncing them with the seven sorrows or the seven woes. And after he's done this, we see him grieving over Jerusalem at the end of chapter 23. And then at the beginning of chapter 24, we see Jesus leaving the temple. And as he leaves the temple, we see his disciples pointing out the various buildings to Jesus, as if Jesus doesn't really know what they are. But, you know, they're probably just interested. Look, look at that, look at this, look at that. But rather than being impressed, Jesus tells them what will happen to the temple building. That the temple will be completely demolished, that not one stone will be left on top of one another. And here Jesus is referring to something that happened in AD 70 when the temple was destroyed. So Jesus is referring to something that's about a generation ahead, 40 years ahead of where they are now. Now, just a note here. Remember that the temple was somewhere that was really important to the Jews. It was a place of God's presence. It was a place where they met with God. It was a place where sacrifices were made. Now, at the end of chapter 23, we saw Jesus grieving over Jerusalem. But here, he seems quite matter-of-fact about the temple building, doesn't he? Now, why is this? Well, think back to Jesus coming into Jerusalem on a donkey. He then goes into the temple. What does he do in the temple? He begins to turn over the tables. And what does he say about the temple at this point? He says, he calls it a den of thieves. You see, what the temple was originally purposed to do, it no longer does. And rather, Jesus is the replacement temple. That's what Jesus is saying. That's what he's always been saying. You see, there have been thoughts about the Jews rebuilding the temple at various points in history. Indeed, some Orthodox Jews want a third temple. But as far as I'm aware, Christians have not thought about rebuilding the temple. Now, why is that? Because Jesus is our temple. He's the true temple in which we can approach God. He is the sacrifice and he is the great high priest. Jesus takes on those roles in himself. And it's through Jesus that we come into the presence of God. We don't need a temple any longer. That's why at the front of the church, we don't have an altar. We have a communion table. And we remember all that Jesus has done. And that's why a building is no longer needed. Well, What about church buildings, you might say this morning? And maybe particularly in the current climate in the Church of Scotland. Well, it's great, isn't it, to have a building to save you from the rain, isn't it? Buildings are important. Some are beautiful, but they aren't of the essence when it comes to faith. Because, of course, we worship Jesus, don't we? We don't come to worship a building. And indeed, for the first part of Christendom, there were no church buildings. People met in homes. So we see just at the beginning of chapter 24 that Jesus isn't too sentimental about the temple because he knows it no longer serves its function. And now he, Jesus, the true temple, has come. And it's through him that we're able to have a relationship with God. Now, after Jesus has spoken a bit about the temple, we then move on to some difficult teaching about the end times. You see, we see in verse 3 that later on, Jesus sits on the Mount of Olives. This is after he's left the temple. He sits on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples come to him privately, i.e., without the crowds. And they ask when all this will happen. When will the temple be destroyed? But then they ask, what sign will signal your return and the end of the world? Now, quite why the destruction of the temple brings up in the mind of the disciples the return of Jesus and the end of the world is difficult to discern. I don't really know why they kind of conflate these two things together. Because remember again that we are at the beginning of Holy Week. Jesus would die on the Friday and rise again on the Sunday. And even by this time, as we know, the disciples have not accepted that Jesus is going to die. And they certainly hadn't grasped that he was going to rise again. So it's difficult to know what prompts what the disciples say here. Now, equally hard to discern is some of what Jesus says to the disciples, especially in terms of timing. It's a bit like that optical illusion from Hedrick Road. Because the two spires look the same size, right next to each other. It's only when you get closer, you realize that they're much further apart than you might have realized. It's hard to discern exactly what Jesus is saying here in terms of timing. So let's have a wee look at this teaching here. Jesus firstly replies to the disciples' question by speaking of false messiahs and wars, nation against nation, famines and earthquakes. This is the birth pains. Now, as you think about these things, obviously these things are happening all the time, aren't they? Throughout the centuries, people have claimed to be the Messiah. You only need to go online and you type in false messiahs, you'll see tons of people that have claimed to be the Messiah. Sun Myung Moon of the Moonies, for example, very famously, and many others. And of course, there are always reports, aren't there, of famines and earthquakes and wars. Now, many people have tried to make predictions based on what's happening in the world to see if what is happening in the world matches up to what Jesus says in Matthew 24. Many, for example, thought that the end was nigh during the two world wars, as nation rose up against nation. They thought perhaps that Adolf Hitler was the Antichrist, but that proved not to be the case. So I want you to see this morning that these birth pains, they happen all the time. And we're not to be misled when we see different things in the world, then necessarily the end is at hand. These are the birth pains. Then next, we see what will happen to the disciples and the followers of Jesus. They'll be arrested, persecuted, and killed. And they will be hated all over the world because they are followers of Jesus. There will be false prophets, rampant sin, and lovelessness. Now again, even though these are really hard and tough things, these things are actually true for any period, aren't they? It's a well-known fact that more Christians were martyred in the 20th century than all the other centuries put together. That's quite something, isn't it? But in a more positive way, Jesus says that the one who endures to the end will be saved, and good news about the kingdom will be preached throughout the whole world, and once that happens, the end will come. Now, of course, there are many people groups who have not heard the gospel, even now in 2024, and so many think that the end cannot actually come until that happens. So it seems that Jesus perhaps has the far picture in view when he's speaking here. Now, let's just take a pause for a second here and try to take some of this in, because what are we to make of it this morning? Well, as with any part of Scripture, we need to balance what Jesus says here with what he says elsewhere. Because when Jesus says that when he returns, he will come like a thief in the night, i.e., at a moment when the people are not expecting. If you're in your house one night and you know that a burglar is coming at 10 past midnight, then you would be prepared, wouldn't you? You'd be ready for them. Of course, you never know when a thief is coming, do you? And Jesus says he will come again like a thief in the night, i.e. a moment when people are not expecting. And indeed, later in this same discourse, Jesus says, no one knows the day or the hour when these things happen. Only the Father knows. And so we cannot construct a timeline of the end times from what Jesus is saying here. And we would be foolish to try. What we have to realize is that Jesus is telling the disciples what will happen in the church age. That these are the regular things that will happen during this period. That famines, earthquakes, wars, false prophets, sin, persecution will be the norm. But the good news will continue to go out, and the one who endures will be saved. Now, as we move on in this passage, in verse 15, we have a bit of a change. Because here, Jesus seems to refer back to the temple and to Daniel the prophet and to the desecration of the temple. Now, it's commonly thought that what Daniel had prophesied had partially been fulfilled in 167 BC when a Greek ruler by the name of Antiochus desecrated the temple in Jerusalem. Antiochus called himself Epiphanes, the illustrious one, or God manifest, and he set up an altar to Zeus over the altar of the burnt offering in the temple, and he sacrificed a pig on the altar. He desecrated the temple. And he went further, slaughtering a great number of Jews and selling others into slavery. And he issued decrees forbidding circumcision and requiring Jews to sacrifice to pagan gods and to eat pig meat, which of course was banned for the Jews. So that was prophesied in Daniel, and it happened in 167 BC. But now, Jesus is referring to this prophecy from Daniel here, 200 years after all this happened. Why? And how? Well, it may be that Jesus is referring to the destruction of the temple, which we've already seen, happened in AD 70. This happened when the future emperor Titus besieged Jerusalem, and following a five-month siege, the city and the temple were destroyed. And Titus and his soldiers celebrated victory upon their return to Rome by parading the menorah and the temple of the bread of God's presence through the streets. That's what you see depicted in this picture. Up until this parading, these items had only ever been seen by the high priest in the temple. Now, according to the historian Josephus, during that period of time, when the temple was destroyed in AD 70 and the people were killed in Jerusalem, around 1.1 million people were killed, mainly because there was a huge number there for the Passover at the time. 97,000 people were enslaved, and there were mass desertions from the city. And so a lot of what you find, if you look back to your Bible in verses 15 to 25 and beyond, seem to fit with what happened in Jerusalem in AD 70. Because clearly at that time, there were terrible times. Lots were killed. There was great anguish. But the question for us is, does what's said here in verses 15 to 25 completely accord with what happened in AD 70? Or are these verses referring to something beyond that, i.e. something that is still to come? You see, what I want you to notice this morning is often that's the way that prophecy works in the Bible. So Daniel made this prophecy. It was partially fulfilled in BC 167, partially fulfilled in AD 70, but it may be that there's a bit still to be fulfilled, that's still to happen. Because many Christians would say that what's described here is the Great Tribulation, which happens either before or after Jesus comes again in glory. Now, we don't have time to go into that today. God willing, when we look at the second part of chapter 24, we'll be able to. But suffice to say this today, there's a lot that's unknown in this passage. Clearly, some of it is referring to things that have passed and are in the past. But it may be that there are still some things that are to come. What are we to hold on today if we're confused by this passage? Well, a couple of things. Firstly, we need to remember there will always be wars, always be famines, always be earthquakes. They are a result of being in a fallen world. They don't necessarily mean that the end is imminent. Yes, of course, the end is eventually going to come, but it doesn't mean it's imminent. We're not to make up timelines, because Jesus will come again like a thief in the night. The second thing is this, and maybe this is the most important thing this morning. Throughout all that's happening in our world, we need to make sure that we endure to the end. We need to make sure that we endure to the end. Because the one who endures to the end will be saved. You see, as Jesus teaches these things to the disciples, I think the disciples didn't really understand what was going on. They didn't even understand what was happening at the end of the week. How could they understand what Jesus was saying here? And even as we look at this 2,000 years later, maybe we look at it and think, oh, I'm a bit confused. I don't really understand what's going on. But the reality is, all things are in God's hands. We can trust in Him. All we need to understand is the one who endures to the end will be saved. So that when Jesus returns, because that's part of this teaching, that Jesus will return again in glory, that you'll find that we're in the right place with Him. And we will be saved. And we will be with Him in glory forever. We need to endure to the end. We need to make sure we're not deceived by false messiahs or prophets, that we're not worried about what's happening in our world. But we simply cling to Jesus. Jesus who is our true temple. Jesus who is the way to God. He is the way, the truth, and the life. So as you look at this passage this morning, yes, some of these things have been fulfilled. Yes, it's possible. Some of these things will be fulfilled in the future. But in the midst of it all, let's cling to Jesus. Let's be found in the right place with him. Let's trust in him. Because the one who endures to the end will be saved.